freaking auto!
This is Brock and Saul.
Brock Heward and Marcus. Sorry about just Mike.
On Seattle Sports.
Heward, not exactly Joe Cap there in the pocket.
Presented by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
Mike Lefko and Brock Heward here with you today. And tomorrow, maybe. We'll see how much further Brock goes on the dating segment. You will.
Are you
like
going to go to Marin upstairs? Is that what you're going to do?
Yeah, you'll like this,
Brock.
You're
going to go to HR?
Matt in Oregon said, when we were talking about Ballmer, how sweaty he got. Lefko got that sweaty when Brock forced him to do an on-air dating show. Hey, it was warm in here that day.
Do you want to take another shot with that? Like the second time around, you want to try that tomorrow?
Probably not.
No, you don't want to do that tomorrow? Okay.
No. Right, I think the resounding phone lines of silence.
I mean, it was worth taking a shot. It was worth taking a shot.
It did lead to some good stories.
It did.
Clearly, because we're still talking about this.
So in 2012, when you were 12 years old, you know, back there, you were just still a youngster. Salk and I, we were old. Wyman was on the air as well. He's an old man, just like Mike and I. Well, he's old. We're middle-aged. And in 2012, there was a QB competition. In 2012, this last weekend that just ended, Michael, the rookie minicamp, we walked away from it going, oh my gosh, Pete's got a problem. Like from your purview a little bit, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but at least what you were just saying, kind of opining about, do you really want a quarterback competition? I mean, you paid Matt Flynn. And like today's dollars, back then, 12 years ago, you gave him $10 million. That would be like with the cap and everything. You gave Matt Flynn $20 million.
Okay.
You want Matt Flynn to be the guy.
But where was Matt Flynn before when you paid him? He wasn't with the Seahawks.
No, he was not.
He came in. He wasn't here already. I don't think it's the exact same situation.
Well, then there was another guy in another tent by the name of Tavares Jackson who torn a pec, played through that torn pec, and was beloved by his locker room. And I would contend more loved by his locker room than Geno. I think Geno is liked a whole bunch in that locker room. I don't want to sit here and speculate on the difference between like and love and everything else, but I do know that there was a further like brotherhood, a further love with Tavares because of his sacrifice, because they were not a great team, because he did not have DK and Tyler in a run game and all these pieces. He was not the comeback player of the year. Dude was just a tough grinder, man, and physical. So there was T-Jack, there was Matt Flynn, and then there was this little Russell Wilson, this little third rounder that just couldn't do wrong. And it was, in fact, like the healthiest thing for that organization is they really took that step and went from a playoff team to a Super Bowl winning team. I think in this situation, because there's so much newness, sure, Lefko, there is familiarity in the locker room with Geno, but new scheme, new voice. You know, you're going to be out there. We're going to be out there at OTAs and training camp, a whole new environment. Listen to Mike McDonald talk. I mean, Mike McDonald speaks in a little Belichickian. You know, as I was listening to him yesterday, actually, I sent Maura and Justin, I said, man, gosh, there's some Bella. The more I think about it, there is some little Belichick. Listen to Belichick and listen to Mike McDonald. This is cut three, Bill Belichick, talking about a 2021 minute. Just listen to the first, I don't know, 20 seconds or so of Belichick. This is just a couple years ago, talking about a minicamp.
They haven't been any problem. They're just trying to do the best they can, but they're swimming. They're in deep water, and you know, their eyes get opened every day as we, you know, move, you know, up in the process, and we're still a long way from anything close to real football, but we're doing more now than we did before. So you know, each day is an acclimation day and an adjustment day for
okay.
them. And
all right, so there's a little bit of Bill just a couple years ago, and I would contend actually in the early years when Bill was Mike's age or even 40 or 50, he was a little more energetic. But listen now to Mike McDonald talk about Byron Murphy.
Tough to really truly evaluate because of the tempo. But just overall, good start. You know, we're not going to crown him right now on he's the next best defensive tackle of all time. But, I mean, we're really excited about it.
I mean, am I way off?
Well, because what, they're being honest and straightforward? There's similar cadences
the
there.
Cadence.
It's the cadence.
It's the blunt. It's the cadence. It's the tone. Both of them are a little wry. Both of them have tremendous sarcasm and humor. When you talk to people behind the scenes about Bill, and we got to see a little bit of it at the roast, and Mike McDonald too, but there's just a straightforwardness to it, right? You know, Pete, when were we at Pete? Last year? Talking about Mike Moore. I mean, listen to the contrast of the guy that was here for 14 years.
You can tell a lot. You can see a lot. And we're looking hard to watch Mike Morris, how he makes this transition that we're putting him through. Mike came in at 290-something, you know, he's 6'6", 290-something. He looks great out there. He's played some defensive line, but not as much as he's going to play now. Really eager to learn it and all of it. Well, you can see stuff, you know, and so we got to use our imagination a little bit, but we know how tough these guys are. We've seen them play football. Now we need to see if they can adapt to our stuff.
It's going to be so different.
There's a lot of positive.
Yeah, Pete's an optimist.
He's a total optimist. And, you know, for Bob and Greg and Brady and the rest of them to transcribe, Mike, it's going to be real easy. This is going way down. Those court reporters like, oh, this is nice. Go ahead. Yeah, I got all of that. I'm not even like really sped up here like Steve Ballmer was when he was a sweaty mess. Like I could follow everything that Mike McDonald's saying. I think because of the newness, this is not a bad thing.
But because of that newness, because you have a first-time head coach, first-time NFL offensive coordinator, first-time defensive coordinator, with all that new,
yep.
Do you want them to undergo an open quarterback competition?
I would not want a rookie, you know, like Russell Wilson intermixed in this, but a guy that's been in the league a couple years that they know a little bit more about, that they can play against and compete against and know Sam Howell. I don't mind it. I'm not going 50-50. I'm there with you. I've said very clearly, Geno should take 7 out of 10 reps. When they go into phase one here and they get into the organized team activities, yeah, Geno's going to go with the ones. And Sam, you know, you're chasing them. And they've made that abundantly clear. Mike has said it. John has said it. After the trade, they've said it. They stick to their word. And you know what? Geno's going to get first shot at it. But if Sam's really good, right? Unlike a year ago with Drew Lock or whatever, like even if Drew played really well, there's going to be no chance. There's just going to be no chance. If Sam is right there, right? I mean, this is the advantage of being young, right? I mean, John Schneider's always, because he's a draft-developed guy, is going to want a young roster. Isn't that the advantage of being young? Is that if Sam is really, really close in this and Geno doesn't separate, don't you want to give the young guy who's making $1 million this year and $2 million next year and give him that opportunity? Because if you do, look what that does to your roster. And look what that does if he ends up being a guy you can truly build around for the next 5-10 years.
So I think the distinction might be, and Brady Henderson mentioned this, and you know we'll talk to him at 8:30 as well, that are we agreed upon this, that you go into the season with Geno as your starting quarterback? I think that's too much
into
to
the
ask.
Season into or the into season. Training camp?
No, into the season.
Into the season?
Yeah, into the season.
You're not even letting him compete at all in OTAs
if
or training camp?
If he's taking third rep, sure.
If Sam goes and throws for 300 in
but
a preseason game and looks great?
No, that's nothing. That's nothing. You got
to. Oh, that's nothing. To you
got to give. You got to give your starting quarterback the opportunity to mesh with this team.
Who's starting quarterback? He's not Mike's starting quarterback.
He's absolutely the starting quarterback.
He's not Grubb's starting quarterback. He's not Grubb's starting quarterback.
He is. Look at this contract. He is absolutely your starting quarterback this year. Now, beyond this year, that's a different story. But with all the problems on this team, Brock, and all the question marks, and not problems. With all the uncertainty on this
great
team,
great tackles, great running backs, defense, great tight end, great receivers.
You want to focus on quarterbacks?
Problems?
You're in your instigating mode today.
Problems? We got problems? We got practice?
My question then is, when does Sam Howell force the competition if it's not going to be opened up? How and what is the market?
The same exact way that Russell Wilson did at rookie minicamp 12 years ago. You know, football people know. Dave Wyman will know. Paul Moyer will know. Ray Roberts will know. Everybody that's played there and been there and done it will know. You'll sit on the sidelines and go, whoa, this dude's coming. This guy's got it. Just like you knew Bryce Miller and Wu last year, like, whoa, this dude's got it. Sam Howell's out there, right? You could see it with Drew Lock. He's a great guy. They were great teammates. But you could feel like, yeah, man, this was always Geno's team. Right, this was always Geno's team. Even though Drew, and he came in, got a couple starts, and good for him. God bless him. Did great. Won a big Monday night game. Got a new deal. Competing to be a starter in New York. But you knew out there, right? Even the casual fans knew. This is Geno's team.
Now,
if Sam comes in a totally new environment where the playing field is way more level, because you didn't do any of that for Ryan Grubb. You didn't do any of that for Scott Huff. You didn't do any of that for Mike McDonald. You did that last year. And in fact, Mike McDonald bashed your head in when he went head-to-head against you in Baltimore. I mean, bashed your head in with what you competed with. So if Sam Howell goes out there and he forces and imposes as well, like, yeah, man, I'm not playing second fiddle. No way. Here's my reps and zing, zing, zing. Here's my reps, zing, zing, zing. Here's my reps, zing, zing, zing. It will tell you. The players will feel it. We will feel it on the sidelines. And if he forces that way, like Russell did in those rookie minicamps and in those OTAs, and who was it? It was last week. Jim Nagy, when he was a scout with the Chiefs, was like, yeah, man, when Russell came to Arrowhead in the preseason, you just knew. Ran for scrambling and making plays, doing dynamic thing. You just knew. Like, he's their guy. So That's what Sam Howell's going to have to do. He's going to have to impose his will into this competition.
And you think in training camp, there's enough to see that?
I think it's really hard, Mike. Yeah. I think it is really, really hard. And I think OTAs, and now the benefit is they do have a few more weeks. They've already been after it. And that's why Gino's not missing a voluntary day. That's why these guys are all out there. That's why we're seeing pictures of DK and all those dudes. They're not missing any time. There's a new sheriff in town. There is a new regime. There is new opportunity. And I think for Sam, there is much more opportunity than there was for Drew Lock.
All right. Well, sounds like we have an interesting conversation to get to with Brady Henderson.
Sure,
as well,
sounds like
8:30.
It.
And we're going to keep powering through this as well. I learned something, I guess, here that you're so passionate about Sam Howell, but there's plenty more you need to know. Here it is, Mike Lefko and Brock Huard.
I'm passionate
Brock
about life.
I know you are.
Passionate about developers.
That coffee's hitting right now. This is Brock and Salk on Seattle Sports and Seattle
developers,
Sports.
Developers.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, the Mariners were held to a season-low 3 hits last night. Also struck out 14 times. Second most they've had in a game this year. Sixth time this season, Brock, they've struck out at least 14 times in a game. And they let Simeon Woods-Richardson rack up a career-high 8 strikeouts. Now, the Rangers also beat the A's 4-2 to win their third straight. And while not the biggest issue in the world on May 7th, now the M's are out of first place by a half game.
I think this is at least the fourth time this year it's been a career high for your opponent. Now, on the flip side, and I think Angie Minting tweeted this, and this is where there's just like this
The seventh inning thing?
Yes. Yeah. Like, there's this huge, like, chasm. Like, this just doesn't make sense. Like, they've Justined a bunch of guys. Do you know what a Justin is, Lefko?
Are you talking about this Justin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know the term that
could
he created?
Could you not get through seven innings? Is that why?
No. Justin,
that's
what is it?
That's probably true, though.
Yeah. To tell him what the Justin is.
When you chase a pitcher before he has a chance to throw a quality start or before he even gets into the sixth.
Yeah. Okay. So they've Justined a bunch of guys, and then there's not been one starter that's gone seven innings on them. But on the flip side, you lead the league in strikeouts. On the flip side, guys like Fott from Arizona have a career high in strikeouts. So did the guy last night. Like, just, and you're leading the league in strikeouts. Like, something's got to give. Like, something over time here has got to give, because you're certainly extending counts. You're certainly getting deep in counts. You're certainly running up the pitch count, and you are getting guys out of there, whether it's in the fifth or the sixth. Nobody's gone through seven. But on the flip side, we got to score more. On the flip side, situationally, we got to hit. On the flip side, you can't be third, fourth, fewest in the league in runs. We've got to start. And, you know, it starts with your superstar. He's got to get going. And when he does, I feel like the rest of this thing is going to fall off.
Yeah, it does put a pretty big burden on Emerson Hancock, the starter today, game 2 against Bailey Ober. It might be his last start. So Brian Wu went 5 shutout innings, struck out 6, and allowed just 3 hits on Saturday. That was his third and likely final rehab start. And here's Emerson Hancock coming off that short 3 2/3 innings against the Braves. So big moment for him today.
I hope he smiles, and I hope he deals. And I just hope he goes out there and really doesn't try to do too much. Don't go out there being perfect, but control that count, something he didn't do a great job of his last time out.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, we'll talk to Brady Henderson about this and much more, I guess, quarterback debate as well, coming up at 8:30. But yesterday, he reported the Seahawks have restructured Mike Jackson's salary. So now he gets over slightly over $1 million. That's all non-guaranteed. They did give him a pretty nice signing bonus, $167,000, a little bit more than that. But according to OverTheCap.com, Brock, they are still over the cap in effective cap space. So we might see some more moves happening here.
Probably John Rattigan. We'll talk to Brady about it, and bless John Rattigan, the backup linebacker and special teamer. They will probably do the same deal, and who knows, maybe guarantee even a little bit less and free up a couple more million bucks, because he, like Thriller, was a tendered free agent and put that number on him and then kind of give you the opportunity to negotiate. And as we talked about last hour, be careful, man. Be careful trying to study all of this cap space and what it means, because they could constantly adjust, constantly move. And a well-run organization like the Seahawks are constantly find a way to stay under and within those salary cap restrictions.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, Brock, I don't know if you know, but last night they brought back the 90s. Game 1, Pacers-Knicks, Eastern Conference semifinal.
John Starks out there.
Game back and forth, except a late controversial screen call, a moving screen called against the Pacers at the end. So the Knicks win 121-117 behind 43 from Jalen Brunson. Then the Timberwolves, you were excited by this.
Oh, man.
Anthony Edwards.
Ferocious.
Destroyed the Nuggets 106-80. They're up 2-0 in that series.
When the Sonics come back, build the Timberwolves. like when the Sonics come back, and some of those names we know, McDaniels, in fact, was a Federal Way kid. Just go ahead and give me guys that are 6'7 to 7 foot and just want to play relentless we basketball. It's not about any me on that team. They just play relentless defense that you don't see anybody, to the point where Barkley at halftime is like, that's the best I've ever seen. That's the best defensive effort I've ever seen against an MVP in Denver at 5,000 feet. They never tired, and a great start for those Wolves. And frankly, I think if they get through the Nuggets, they got a chance to win a championship. They're built that well.
They must have had good coffee with all the energy they had against the Nuggets yesterday. But yeah, that was impressive. And one more thing you need to know, Brock. This was big for Mora. Game one, Bruins-Panthers. Little bit of revenge from last year. Bruins win 5-1. Take game one.
No, there's one more thing you need to know. Stupid guy over here, what Brock doesn't know, Brock's an idiot, is there have been 4 Cougs drafted in the first round in baseball.
That is
so
big.
The youngster yesterday was what, a second rounder?
Second round pick, 2021, yeah.
Pretty cool. He got his call up. Was it with Cleveland? Is that where he is?
Yes, debuted with Cleveland. Kyle Manzardo.
But shame on me. I knew that Aaron Seeley was a first round pick. I thought that old Olerud was a first round pick for Bobo Brayton back in the day. But nope, he was a third rounder, became a star. Cougs baseball back in the day. Frosty Westring, Bobo Brayton, two names you should know. And everything you need to know.
That is, now I know those names. I will not forget those. That is everything you need to know. We got some good conversations to get into with Brady Henderson. So he will join us next year. We'll get into everything around Seahawks rookie minicamp and what the rest of this offseason will play out like. Yes, the Sam Howell and Geno Smith discussion. We will ask Brady about that as well. This is Brock and Salk on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
This is Brock and Salk.
Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
We've had a lot of good Seahawks conversations. We'll continue it now. Mike Lefko, Brock Heward here. I almost called you Brock Salk. You two just kind of meshed together.
Do you know
who
that bumper music is, by the way?
No. Do you?
That's tantric.
Do you know music?
They're amazing.
You know a guy who knows all music.
Gets my water
things.
Moving every single time we play that.
A man who will judge you on your music taste, Brock, joins us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Brady Henderson is with us. Brady, how are you this morning?
What's up, fellas? How's it going?
Now, Dude, do you appreciate Brock's musical tastes?
Typically, no.
No.
So
I did get Brock into the war on drugs, which has been a huge proud moment of the last like 6 months of my life. So
I'm very uncomfortable with the way that sounds.
Eye to eye there.
Very, very uncomfortable with the way that sounds. I did get Brock into the war on drugs. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The band, the war on drugs.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I don't mind that. You know, Ronald Reagan's wife did a great job with that. It's called DARE, D-A-R-E, Drug Abuse Resistance Education, which was the war on drugs in the 80s. Officer Sokolik, rest. I don't know if he's still alive. If you're out there, I love you, buddy. You were great. You were our officer back in the day at Meeker Elementary and Aylin Junior High. Anyhow, Brady, that's nonsense. That's nothing that anybody needs to know about. What they need to know about are what your eyes see. Big picture. What your eyes saw over 3 days. This is so fascinating to me. I can't wait to catch up with you. What your eyes saw at rookie minicamp.
Well, hopefully I'm not going to disappoint you here. So we only actually were there for 2 days.
Oh, my gosh.
2 days of practice.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. And as you know, Brock, as you know, it can be very hard to evaluate most of the players there in that setting just when they're not in pads. So, you know, and their top picks, or a lot of their picks were linemen, which is the last people you can really evaluate in a setting like that. You also can't really evaluate cornerbacks because – this time of the year, they're not making plays on the ball. They're not really allowed to. So a lot of what you see there is, okay, does this guy look the part? Does he, quote unquote, pass the eye test? You can evaluate the quarterbacks to some degree. And I thought the first day for them was pretty rough. And it was really hard to know what – it was really hard to evaluate a lot around them just because the quarterback play was so rough.
Yeah.
It did get a lot better on day two. And, you know, those guys are in a very, very tough situation when you consider, you know, they show up, what, on a Thursday, they get the playbook thrown at them, then they're thrown to receivers they've never thrown to. So the quarterback play, I would say even by the low standards of rookie minicamp, it was pretty rough the first day. And then it got better the second day. But I will tell you this, you know, I talked about how it's really about looking the part. You know, Byron Murphy, just from a physical standpoint, looks the part. And I know he's not the biggest defensive tackle, and that was one reason why you, and I think me as well, you know, questioned whether he might be the pick there at 16. But, you know, aside from the 1 or 2 inches that some other defensive tackles on him, I mean, he looks really stout, really quick, really explosive. I know Mike McDonald had an interesting comment about him after the second day, which we can get into. But just from a physical standpoint, he definitely looks the part.
Yeah, like if you squint your eyes, does he look a little like Aaron Donald?
Yeah, I mean, you've used the phrase ball of muscle to describe Byron Murphy. Aaron Donald was he was on a different level in that regard. I mean, you've seen the guy has like a six-pack, which you don't see from, 300-pound defensive tackle. So talking about Aaron Donald now. So, yeah, maybe in like an Aaron Donald light kind of way, but nobody is quite like Aaron Donald. Nobody is built quite like that, just with the, with that kind of level of like you know what I mean? Like stature. How shredded Aaron Donald is at that size. Yeah.
Well, Brady, what about the overall tone and mood of practice? Because I know everything Mike McDonald does and has been scrutinized and compared to Pete Carroll and, what has gone on with the walls and, how their practices might be different and what's the demeanor compared to the old regime. So what did you notice with how practices were kind of run and structured?
Yeah, the music wasn't quite as loud. There still was music. It wasn't quite as loud. Now, I think part of that was, I don't know if that's totally a reflection of how it's going to be, during practices in general. I think part of the idea there was, you're really in teaching mode with these guys you're just teaching them how to practice and how to, learn your system and everything. So I think they wanted to keep the music down just because they wanted to be able to communicate. We'll see what it looks like when they get the veterans there. I've noticed that Mike McDonald he just seems a lot more comfortable in that kind of setting when he's, after practice talking about football. He just seems a lot more relaxed than he did, in some other settings where we've heard from him, even recently after the draft. I'll tell you this too, like it really hit me being out there the first day Friday. And obviously I've covered every sort of media availability that McDonald has had, from his press conference to the owners meetings. I wasn't there at the combine, but and then the 3 days after the draft where we talked to him, seeing him on the field, with the hat on, with the whistle, that was the first time it really hit me. Like I went out there Friday and I saw him and walking around, and that was the first time it hit me where I was like, oh, wow, the Seahawks have a new head coach. So I just thought that was kind of an interesting kind of aha moment for me.
I'm going to play you two pieces of sound. And, we're good enough friends, right? You and I enjoy War on Drugs together now. And, we've known each other for a long time, Hitman. We go back to your Cobra Blood days. I'm going to play you two pieces of sound. And if you think I'm all wet, we're good enough friends. You can be like, no, that's a dumb take. Like, don't ever bring that to light again. But if you think it's like, that kind of plays a little bit, just be totally honest with me. Here's Bill Belichick from 3 years ago talking at a minicamp. Here's the old New England Patriots coach.
They haven't been any problem. They're just trying to do the best they can, but they're swimming, they're in deep water, and their eyes get opened every day as we move up in the process, and we're still a long way from anything close to real football, but we're doing more now than we did before. So each day is an acclimation day and an adjustment day for them, and I think they're just trying to keep their head above water and try to swim or paddle in the right direction, knowing that they're not real.
There's Bill, and here was Mike McDonald talking about Byron Murphy after that second practice.
Again, tough to really truly evaluate because of the tempo, but just overall good start. We're not going to crown him right now on he's the next best defensive tackle of all time, but we're really excited about it.
Is there some kind of tone and tempo and speech pattern? I was like, gosh, as I was listening to all of these cuts that Morris sent and Mike McDonald, I'm like, I hadn't really realized it in his introductory press conference or at the draft where the energy's a little higher, but when you got the whistle around your neck and you're coming off the practice field, is there a little Belichickian to McDonald?
That had not occurred to me. I would probably have to hear it again to really agree with you. I mean, Belichick, I would say that McDonald is a lot better at enunciating. Belichick just kind of mumbles his way through a lot of his answers. Yep. Although he's way better now that he's a media guy, which is fascinating to hear him share stories and be as like,
Or Justin, maybe you could find that cut you had yesterday of the old roast of Tom Brady, where Belichick got up there and had some fine comments to say about one tight end and Ron Gronkowski. So yeah, there was a little better pacing there, but not even like the total tone of the voice, but just the manner with and the authority and kind of just the blunt honesty with which he spoke was, I don't know, man, it's pretty refreshing.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, I think that the comment he made about Murphy and, you know, maybe needing to get in better shape, I thought that was a fascinating thing just to volunteer. And I don't know about you, Brock, but I thought back to, you know, when the Seahawks, when Pete Carroll and John Schneider first arrived, remember that one of the first moves they made was they traded for Charlie Whitehurst. And they had a press conference for him. I can still remember Tim Hasselbeck on your show incredulously saying they gave him a press conference. And look, I think that move obviously didn't really work out, and it sort of looks overblown in retrospect. But I do think part of the motivation there was sending a message that, hey, yeah, we know Matt Hasselbeck is the best quarterback in franchise history, the only one to take them to the Super Bowl, but everybody here is going to have to compete. And I just kind of wondered, I thought when I heard Mike McDonald say that, I thought back to that, and I wondered if maybe there's kind of a similar message being sent to everybody. And look, I think that Mike McDonald knows that as a first-time head coach, everything he says is going to be under the microscope and it's going to be picked apart. So I think that he knows, like, that there's got to be intentionality in everything he says. And I think that he was maybe sending a message there, kind of similar to what he said. He told us at the owners' meetings, I think it was, when we asked him about Devin Witherspoon, and he said the messaging from the coaching staff has been that Witherspoon had a good rookie season, but it could have been a lot better. And I think what he's doing there is trying to set a tone and say, look, nobody here is on scholarship, not even the best defensive player from last season on the team, not even the first round pick who, you know, looks like he could be a really special player. So I think there's kind of some message being sent to those players, to the rest of the team, that if he's saying that about these two very high profile guys, then everybody else better be on their P's and Q's.
Yeah. And Brady, it sounds like Byron Murphy said that he loved that he appreciated McDonald being that demanding and he wants to be pushed. So for these past couple of draft classes where, you know, we saw Reek Woolen who flashed onto the scene and then, you know, took a step back last year. And for guys like that, along with what you said about Witherspoon, is that going to be the key that this staff can hopefully get the most out of these guys?
Yeah, I think Witherspoon's in Reek Woolen's in an interesting spot, just because, you know, if you talk to people in the building, I think there's a thought that he just didn't really handle the success that he had as a rookie, you know, as well as he needed to, and then maybe got a little bit complacent, and then that was maybe part of kind of the up and down nature of last season. And so I don't think they were necessarily going into that draft with the idea that they had to take, you know, a cornerback, certainly not two cornerbacks. I mean, knowing that was already a pretty deep position group. Now, some of, you know, Trey Brown entering last year of his rookie deal, Mike Jackson's on a one-year deal, Artie Burns is on a one-year deal. So maybe there is some long-term need there, but not enough to where you had to draft two cornerbacks. My understanding is they had fourth-round grades on both of those guys, so that was just simply a matter of, you know, taking the best player available. And they did that twice. And so whether it was intentional or not, I think every one of those cornerbacks, probably outside of Witherspoon, was put on notice to some degree that, yeah, nothing is going to be guaranteed. Now, look, those guys are, you know, day three picks, and so I don't necessarily think that any of those guys, or certainly not Woolen, thinks that either of them are going to be a threat to take a spot. But I think that is a wake-up call for players when they see the team draft a guy at their position, and when they do it twice, and when you hear that, you know, they had fourth-round grades on both of those guys, then I would think that that would – If Reek Woolen still needed a fire to be lit under his rear end, I would think that would do it. But I would also think just having a new coaching staff in here would accomplish that as well.
Think about that, man. A fire on your rear end just burns. It just gets you right away. It gets you hopping like those folks do out on that berm for 14 years. Brady Henderson here with us from ESPN. For 14 years, Brady, those fans have come to training camp, filled up the berm, and watched Pete operate, watched with the loud music, watched with the energy, watched with the bag drills to start practice and all of that. I know that this was just a rookie mini camp, right? And I know it was Mike McDonald's first time at it, but where will the fans 14 years in feel or see the biggest difference? Was there anything that jumped out from the coaching staff? Anything that jumped out with the tempo of practice at all that was a distinct difference from what you've witnessed all your years covering them?
I mean, aside from just Mike McDonald walking around there and not Pete Carroll, I think the coaches, the fact that the coaching staff is all new, and I don't know how much fans on the Burr really pay attention to the coaching staff, but, you know, one thing that struck me was, and it totally makes sense, but I really had to see it to kind of realize it, is that when you have a whole new coaching staff, you're going to have whole new set of drills that these guys are doing. And I think, you know, just being out there for so long, I was used to generally seeing the same thing happen in practice drill wise. And, you know, they would change up a few things over the years, but these were pretty much all new drills once they actually got practice going. And so I guess you'd probably have to be a pretty hardcore fan, like really paying attention to practice to really notice that. But that's one thing that's going to be interesting. And I'm sure that for all the newness there is, there's still going to be the one-on-one pass rush drill, Brock, which I know you and I both love. And every time you're out there,
I grab you, say, Brady, I'm going to light a fire under your rear end right here. Let's go. Let's go watch this one-on-one drill. Let's go watch these guys get after it. Yes. And I wrangle you and Salk and Mora and Justin for the best drills at training camp for
and
sure.
And you ask me who every player is because you never think to grab a roster.
I don't want to put my Ebenezers on. I mean, let's be fair. I got the roster. Do I want to put my glasses on out there? No. Yeah. You got the young eyes. Those young dreamy eyes. I'd rather have you look at those guys and numbers.
There it is. I thought you would compare, you know, Brian Murphy's body, Brock, because the shots of him, he did look big. He looked like a physical specimen. We know he lives in the weight room, but you got it in on Brady's eyes. Brady, this is something that Brock was pretty passionate about. I didn't know it would be quite the conversation we got into earlier, but I think you've touched on this a little bit as well. What do you think of the quarterback situation that this coaching staff is high on Sam Howell? Brock thinks there could be a legitimate push for Sam Howell to challenge Geno Smith. What's your take on these two quarterbacks?
Yeah, I mean, we have not seen Sam Howell throw yet just because we have not had any of the open OTAs. Or none of their OTAs have been open to the media yet, and that was obviously just the rookies there. But, I mean, hearing what I've heard about him, it's very clear that at least the front office is very high on him. And we've heard John Schneider talk on the radio about Sam Howell and why they loved him and how the fact that he's 23 years old and has, you know, 18 starts under his belt. And so I heard Jim Nagy, I think on your show the other day, talk about how he hopes that the Seahawks open up to a quarterback competition. Jim Nagy knows way more about football than I ever will, but I would respectfully disagree with that. I just think that the Seahawks have enough money tied to Geno Smith. Not that he's on this massive contract, but they have enough guaranteed money committed to him already that I think the ideal scenario is that they make it work with him for at least one more season. And to do that, when you're talking about a guy learning a new offense, I think you're kind of doing him a disservice when you talk about asking him to split reps in training camp with Sam Howell and then, you know, compete and learn a new offense with the quarterback competition hanging over his head. So I think in an ideal world, because they are somewhat pot committed to Geno for this season, I think you make it work with him and then revisit that decision next offseason. And with Sam Howell being on a 2-year contract or, you know, having 2 years left on his rookie contract, I think you can afford to wait and to give it time. Now, all that said, I think if Geno Smith struggles out of the gate, then I don't think they are so committed to him that, you know, they would ride it out with him. I think there could be the, you know, quote unquote short leash. But I think that in an ideal world, you try to make it work with Geno. And then if it's not working in the middle of the season or at some point in the season, then maybe you pull the plug and put Howell in there.
But what did I just hear you say 7 minutes ago? What did I just hear Brady say 7 minutes ago? I just heard Brady say 7 minutes ago, they're not pot committed to anybody or treat anybody or any hand differently, whether you're Devin Witherspoon or Byron Murphy. Like the whole essence of it is like, no, man, everybody's going to come out here and have to earn their spot. Why would Geno be different with a whole new staff and a whole new regime?
Yeah, but and I'm not saying that they are committed to him because he's basically, you know, so much better than Sam Howell and the resume is so much better. I'm saying, you know, they have got quite a bit of money committed to him. I don't think they would want him to be their backup making, you know, $20+ million a year this season or $20+ million this season. So I think there's a financial incentive to try to make it work with Geno, but that doesn't mean that you stick by him if he continues to struggle, you know, during the season.
I don't know about that, Brady.
I just think you've got to give him the best chance.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think that there can be, and as I said to Mike, and where my passion lies in this is, I think we're all on the same page. This is Geno's job to lose. This is not a wide open 50-50. Geno, you're going to get the first huddle. Geno, you're going to get the first reps. Geno, this is going to be your job to lose. But if Sam pushes in a way that Drew Locke did not, if Sam pushes and forces the issue, and the guys on the team are like, dude, this guy can play. And the front office who's sitting up in their windows watching every rep of minicamps like, dude, Sam is elevating the people around him. I think you can actually get one heck of a bounce the other way, just as they did when Russell Wilson took over in 2012, when they were financially pot committed to Matt Flynn. It was like, man, look at what that says to our locker room. Look at what that says to these guys. Like, we don't care what you get paid. We don't care where you get drafted. We don't care where you come from. We have new eyes here. We have new coaching staff, and we're going to let the guy that is playing the best be the one to have the ball and go run with it.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. And I think any new coach coming in and running a program would want that to be the clear message. I guess my only issue is I would wonder if you're having Geno split reps while you're having him learn a new offense, is that going to put him in position to succeed? Now, the flip side of that is that Sam Howell is also learning a new offense. And so if he can make that push, yep, despite not getting all those reps, then, you know, maybe, you know, then that's the sign. I just go back to the competition they had 2 years ago with Geno and Drew Locke. And it was Geno getting the majority of the reps the entire time. And it just never seemed like Locke had enough of a chance to really, to really grab hold of that competition. Obviously, he got sick during training camp, and that, mm-hmm, you know, completely scuttled it. But I don't know. I just remember that.
Do you think that was more of the system, or do you think it was more Drew? Do you think it was more of just like, hey, man, you know, Geno's been here a year, people are in place, things are familiar? Or do you think it was more of, man, Drew, just, he's not really pushing him. He's just too inconsistent. He's careless with the ball. He's too inaccurate in some. Do you think it was more Drew or just the circumstances that first time around?
I think it was the understanding of the offense, because I remember watching both of those guys and thinking neither one of them is really separating himself from the other, at least in terms of, you know, what we see during practice, what we see during the games. I remember talking to a coach at the time who said the same thing, that really neither of those guys have really pulled away from each other. I think the big difference was, you know, was Geno knew the offense, and he was just able to better command the huddle. And, you know, he wasn't going to make the mistake late in the game. I think it was the Pittsburgh game, because, you know, he didn't recognize a pressure off the edge that ended up, you know, causing a sack fumble. And so I think Geno just had such better command. That's why Pete Carroll stuck with him, but just the results on the field weren't all that different aside from that.
What are you smiling about, Lefko?
I want to see how you keep pushing him. Brady, you walked into this like I did.
Yeah, no, let's do this.
No, it's good. It's not something I thought would be this much of a debate, but, you know, it's an interesting question. I think I am curious.
Lefko, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I want to turn this back on Brock.
Yes, go for it. That's why I've been sitting this one out. Keep it going.
Yeah, okay, let's say if Sam Howell overtakes Geno, and that Geno and that Sam Howell is the guy, what do you then do with Geno Smith making all that money that he's making? What do you do with him?
Yeah, he's a great backup. You know, it's the same thing you did with Matt Flynn when it was clear that Russell Wilson was the guy. Like, okay, you know, you're going to be the backup, and, you know, yeah, this for this season, it's a fair amount of commitment, but my goodness gracious, are we going to be on the great end of it after? Because we're not pot committed to Geno after the season. These are kind of year-to-year deals, so... Yeah, that's why I think the structure of Geno's deal actually allows this to happen. It's not as if you're Kirk Cousins and you've got tens of millions on the cap for years to come and it burdens you. It is, if this dude, and it's a big if, and quite honestly, if I was hedging my bet, I'm on the same side as you two. Like, if I'm putting my bet, and since this is a pot committed and we're into poker analogies, like, I'm not playing the hand that Sam's going to win this. But I am going to give him the opportunity, maybe even more so than Drew Locke, because it's all new. Because in that regard, it is a level playing field. I don't really care about the relationships with DK and Geno. And sometimes people say behind the scenes, Lefko, it's a little strained, actually. So yeah. I don't know if it is just this beloved Tavares Jackson, Geno's our guy. I think the locker room is going to be the greatest indicator. And if Sam lights it up, he tears it up. If Brady, you're out there at OTAs going, goodness gracious, this guy ain't missing a throw. Goodness gracious, this guy bounced around. This guy's elevating everybody around him. I think you're going to see a training camp that may have more competition than what we deem it does before all this offseason starts.
Okay. Fair.
You got anything else for me?
Yeah.
You got anything else for me? Fire. Let's go.
No, I sort of turned the tables on you and I started interviewing you, and then I realized that I don't really know what to say after that.
No, that's it. I thought, okay, are you guys going to keep going? It was good. We carried this for a while. It was some good insight. And, you know, I think this is when you just have rookie minicamp to go off on, it lends itself to that because we haven't seen these guys on the field yet. It will be fascinating to see how they all work together. And what gets lost, I feel like, in all this is talking about the draft class. Yeah, how do all these pieces fit together with the important parts of the roster, the veterans? So all that will be
decided. I'll say one more thing on Sam. I'll give you one more little thing on Sam to chew on, Brady, and think about. And Jim Nagy said it to us last week. He's like, remember, Jim was a scout with the Chiefs when it happened, when Russell went into Arrowhead in 2012 and just put on a show in that preseason. I mean, Sam can run, and Sam is willing to run. And I think that will be the best thing for Geno, because that's where, to me, he regressed the most last year, is using his legs and his creativity, making things happen on third down. You're going to get the best of both of them, and that's exactly why they went after him, exactly why they were thrilled they won the trade for Sam Howell when four other combatants were at it, because I think this will bring the best out of Geno Smith as well, and that's what this team needs.
Yeah, that was an interesting part of Geno Smith year last year, where he actually surprised me with how well he moved around and how well he ran. Not that he was, you know, Kyler Murray or Lamar Jackson in 2022, but the guy made, you know, he picked up a lot of first downs with his legs. And then for whatever reason, that didn't happen last season. And so, yeah, that could be, I agree with you there. That could be something that, you know, maybe Geno gets a reminder that, you don't have to take a sack. You don't have to try to extend the play. You don't have to throw it away. You can use your legs and pick up a first down here and there.
21.9 on that catapult. Number one in week one of the offseason, as he reminded, pinned tweet on his old Twitter. Number one fastest guy, at least the first week of that offseason. Brady, you're the best. Sorry you had to deal with some punches my way, but, you know, that's the way it goes when we talk quarterbacks.
Hey, bring it. Bring it, baby.
Punch back.
Let's go.
War on drugs. Yeah,
normally you get an intro music into the ring, but Brady gets we get to play him out with his.
You guys read the ESPN article that our friend Brady Henderson wrote?
The hippies. The hippies. We read it. We hate him.
We hate him.
I love that we hate him.
Oh, I love it.
I love that song right there.
Oh, thanks, Brady. A lot of fun this morning. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, fellas.
Yeah. Thank you, Brady.
The play out. We got him the play out
there. You just chuckle at me, Lefko. You know that? You're a youngster, and you work with a couple, you know, old man Muppets, I call them all the time, but you chuckle at me the same way they do. You're just like, I can't figure you out here. Like, just you're little.
It's been an entertaining morning. It has been. We still got another hour left. And you know what? We've talked a lot of Seahawks. We have a way, I think. We have a way to fix the Mariners' offense. It's unconventional, but there's a way to fix it. So we are going to get into that next. This is Mike Lefko, Brock Heard with you on Brock and Salk on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.